What about the issue of, I was asking you before, sort of myths or misconceptions about this whole area that you think are important to address? Or do you think most people are pretty well on board and understand what needs to be done?
No, I think that thinking back historically, when bisphosphonates began to be tested, oncologists were really pretty much in the dark in terms of bone biology. It wasn't something we learned in medical school. It wasn't something we learned in our fellowships. There were no drugs to treat bony disease. We had to learn what osteoclasts and osteoblasts were. We had to learn a lot of bone biology. In recent years, we've been educated in terms of the occurrence of bone loss. It's only in the last 2, 3, 4 years we've learned that aromatase inhibitors, as we widely use them, have significant bony effects. Same thing is true of androgen deprivation therapy. So I, for one, a number of years ago, would treat a patient with androgen deprivation therapy and didn't do bone monitoring. I just wasn't aware of it. So it's increasing awareness of these phenomena in education, which has gone on within the oncology community about bisphosphonates. And in turn, I think we are learning more and we need to educate all of us about the bone biology. So we're learning a lot about the RANK ligand RANK pathway in the last year or two. And now the language is changing once again. As we talked before, we're learning about DKK1, we're learning about osteoblast function, we're learning about PTHRP. We now have in our language vicious cycle of bone metastasis, which we didn't have before. So I think the awareness is increasing, or the need for increasing awareness within the oncology community of bone physiology, bone biology, and how our treatments affect our patients is occurring, and it's very important to do so.
You know, even though the incidence of ONJ is pretty low, I think it really has caught everybody's attention. And one of the things I hear talked about is, does every patient with metastatic bone disease need a bisphosphonate? What about the patient with very minimal bone disease?
Yes, ONJ is a terribly important occurrence. I personally think it's very important, but it's gotten a lot of more press than certain other complications, probably, as we said before, because bisphosphonates are so well tolerated otherwise. It's certainly very important, but you raise a very, very important issue. And to the present time, all people with bone metastasis have been treated the same way. So they're all apples in the basket. But we now know from a number of the bone marker studies that have been done, so Rob Coleman, Janet Brown have published, and we published, among others, that all patients with bone metastasis are not the same. So if you go back and you look at these zoledronic acid studies, if you look at the baseline amount of bone resorption as measured by baseline urinary N-telopeptide, in all the diseases, there are different categories of patients. So as a rough summary, about a third of the patients with bone mets will present with low bone resorption. A third of the patients will present with intermediate levels of bone resorption as measured by a urinary N-telopeptide between 50 and 100. Low would be less than 50. And a third of the patients present with high bone resorption, an N-telopeptide more than 100. And surprisingly, patients with prostate cancer, blastic disease, have the highest amount of bone resorption going on. Okay, so now if you look at the incidence of skeletal-related events depending on the amount of baseline bone resorption, we find that if you have high resorption, you have double or triple the rate of SREs over ensuing years. If you have high bone resorption compared to low resorption, you have a higher incidence of progression of cancer in bone. If you have higher resorption compared to lower resorption, you have a higher fracture rate, you have a higher need for radiation therapy. And most importantly, if you take the patient who presents with an N-telopeptide higher than 100 and compare the survival of that individual to a patient who presents with an N-telopeptide less than 50, you can predict that there's 4 times the risk of death. So all patients with bone mets when they present are not the same. They're apples and oranges and pears in the basket. Now, what we don't know is we don't know if we can treat people who have low resorption with less frequent doses of bisphosphonates. So there are 2 trials that are underway to try to look at that question. The first trial is called the Optimize 2 trial. And the design of that trial is to take people who are on bisphosphonates, monthly zoledronic acid, for 9 to 12 months and randomize them to one of 3 arms. The first arm will be zoledronic acid monthly continued into the second year. Second arm will be zoledronic every 3 months into the second year, arbitrarily every 3 months. And the third arm is stop the bisphosphonate after a year and watch until they have a skeletal-related event. When they have a skeletal-related event, reinstitute the zoledronic acid at that point in time. The second study, which is more directed at your question, Neil, is run in England. This is a study which is a marker-directed therapy, and the design of that study is right from the get-go to randomize people to monthly zoledronic acid therapy as we do in one arm, And the second arm is the marker-directed therapy. So depending on the level of urinary enteleopeptide every 4 months, if the levels of resorption, the enteleopeptide is high, you would do monthly zoledronic acid. If it's intermediate, you do every 2 months zoledronic acid therapy. If it's low, if the urinary enteleopeptide is less than 50, you would give the zoledronic acid every 4 months. So it's an attempt to individualize therapy based on the markers of bone resorption.
But there's not a no treatment arm.
Not in that study. There's no treatment arm.
What about clinically right now? Again, the patient with one bone med, very low tumor burden in the bone. Is it a rational consideration to not use a bisphosphonate?
Well, we don't have any data directly to answer that question. What we do know is that even patients with no pain or even patients who have lesser burdens of disease still have skeletal-related events occurring. The question of whether you should use pain as a indicator to start bisphosphonate therapy, well, when we look back at the zoledronic acid breast cancer study and we looked at the effect of zoledronic acid in people who have bone mets and pain, there was about a 25 or 30% decrease in events over time. When we look back at those people who had bone mets and didn't have pain, there was an even greater benefit in terms of delaying skeletal-related events. So right now, in the absence of a prospective randomized study of that population, I personally would not deny bisphosphonate therapy for 2 years for that patient, although it would be a wonderful study to do, Neil.